always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this fine Sunday night. By the time we are done with this, with this episode, we will be into Monday morning my time. But I'm joined on this Sunday night by you guys. We all collectively watched the Lakers play the Sacramento Kings. They beat the crap out of the Sacramento Kings. This comes after beating the crap out of the Golden State Warriors. That is two straight blowout victories. According to Jovan, this is the first time they've done that since like November. So I'm going to enjoy it. There are obviously reasons to throw some salt on this win and throw some salt on this weekend. The Warriors are tanking. The Kings are tanking. Neither team is very good. And yet I don't care to do that. I actually think I'm going to go the opposite direction, and I'm going to make the case that this is actually a weekend that the Lakers should hopefully learn from. Meaning they have an opportunity here, if they're actually paying attention, to like learn, hey, when we have a more balanced approach, there just isn't much that teams can really do with the amount of creation and offense across this roster. So I'm going to make that point. I want to talk a little bit about LeBron. I want to talk also a little bit about Austin and the amount of sacrifice that he is making and whether it might be a little too much sacrificing. I'm going to have some talking points from that game. Then I'll go into the Q&A, and then I will send us off into the rest of our weeks. So let's go ahead and do that. First, a quick reminder, please hit that subscribe button. Please hit that like button. Please hit that share button. All of those buttons help us quite a bit. If you guys are listening to this show in the morning via podcast, please subscribe wherever it is that you get those podcasts, preferably on Odyssey, but I'm not picky. If you guys are looking for the show in its video version, youtube.com/@LakersLounge is where you can find it. I am, again, no longer sending this out directly to Twitter. So the only way to watch this especially in live form is here on YouTube. So find the show here. All right, let's go ahead. We got all that stuff out of the way. Let's dive on in, starting with a win over the Sacramento Kings that I just kind of want to enjoy for a little bit. This one was game got out of hand quickly, and that's exactly what I was looking for. Yes, there were moments where Sacramento kind of climbed back into it, made it a 10-point game, maybe at times like an 8-point game, and it was mostly with the Lakers kind of playing with their food. I thought some of the lineup choices, i.e. the original starting group, didn't make a ton of sense. I think the Lakers are still very susceptible to bad habits, and I had that kind of crept into this game as well. But when the Lakers were approaching this game from a balanced standpoint on offense, when they were actually getting stops and running on those stops, they were very clearly, obviously, not just the best team on the court, but like very clearly an idealized version of themselves, like the team that they should be. That's what we got to see from the Lakers in those minutes. So hopefully now that you have that as tape, as data, as example, enough examples that J.J. Redick and the coaching staff can kind of point to with this team that does kind of wander away from the game plan very frequently. They can at least, like, the coaching staff can at least be like, hey, you guys can play whatever style that you guys want to play. Luka, if you want Luka ball, fine. LeBron, you want LeBron ball, fine. DeAndre Ayton, you want DeAndre Ayton ball? Fine. You guys can play whatever style of basketball that you want to play. But the only way that we are actually going to be the type of team or the actualized team that we need to be, the only way that happens is by approaching this thing from a more balanced standpoint, meaning there are Luka possessions, there are LeBron possessions, there are Austin possessions, there are Luke Kennard possessions, there are DeAndre Ayton possessions. Like there are, you know, a multitude of ways from an offensive firepower standpoint that the Lakers should be able to take care of business. And yet that isn't always the case. So let's go ahead and dive on in. I'm about to sneeze, so I'm going to play this and hopefully take care of that. I played that one because I was trying to sneeze, wasn't able to. Boy, could you imagine how nice it would be if you could just like sneeze on demand, clear out your sinuses and move on with your life. But no, I played that because, you know, take a look at those standings. And the Lakers are creeping a little bit. They are right now, obviously, still at the sixth spot. But you look at the Denver Nuggets, and they're in a bit of a tailspin. They're 4-6 over their last 10. The Lakers are now only a half of a game back of Denver. They sit currently only two losses back of the Houston Rockets that, you know, they currently hold the 3 seed. You know, that's only a game and a half total that the Lakers would have to make up there.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored.
And now look, like, am I expecting the Lakers to go on some crazy run? No. Their schedule is very tough to close this season out. That's what the league kind of usually tends to do. They like to backload the Lakers schedule so you have kind of premier matchups after football has already wrapped. But, you know, even while I have made the point that, oh, sky is falling, just got hit with a piece of sky the other day, there is plenty of reason, or there were plenty, is still actually plenty of reason to be very nervous about this team. But there's also plenty of reason to kind of look at the situation around them and be like, everybody else is kind of freaking about their team too, right? Like Oklahoma City, is J-Dub ever going to be healthy? San Antonio, like, what are those playoff reps actually going to look like? Houston, what's this thing going to look like in the playoffs without an actual point guard? Minnesota, they are on one hand back-to-back trips to the Western Conference Finals, but is that their ceiling? Also, they have kind of dicked around for a bit, a big part of the season. They should probably be much higher in the standings. Does that team take basketball seriously enough, consistently enough? Denver, so many injuries over the course of the season, and for some reason they aren't as overwhelming in the clutch as they usually are either. Is that kind of showing some cracks in their facade? You know, we know about the Lakers' concerns, and then everybody else behind them. Phoenix is dealing with a ton of injuries, and they've been kind of the try-hard story. Try-hard stories don't normally factor into the playoff picture all that well. Golden State is currently at the 8 seed. They are just an absolute free fall. And who knows if or when they'll get Steph Curry back, let alone Kristaps Porzingis. The Clippers, right, they traded their starting center away, so clearly they're kind of just simming to the end of the season as well. Portland, fun story, but not exactly a playoff team that you would be all that worried about. And then outside of the 10 seed, you have Memphis, Dallas, New Orleans, Utah, and Sacramento. All of those teams are just very openly and brazenly tanking. So, like, this conference that, you know, is still brutal, like Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Houston, Minnesota, Denver, LA, those are six bona fide playoff teams, and the playoffs in the West are still going to be knockdown dragouts almost every series. But it's not as brutal a West as we had once thought. And all the Lakers have to do is commit to the style of basketball that we know it's going to take for them to be the best version of themselves. And if they do that, if they build those habits, if they get these reps over the last however many games that they have, they've played 60 games. So if over the final 22 games here, they get the reps that they've desperately needed, they've built some kind of overall kind of identity and style of basketball that you know, they commit to a style of basketball. Hopefully it's the best one, but I'll take any, honestly. They haven't really committed to anything. We've talked about this. This is a front office on down issue. But I don't know. Like, am I going to take the Lakers to make it to the championship? Obviously not. Am I going to take them in, you know, would I bet on them to get out of the first round? Probably not. And then would I bet on them to get out of the second round if they get out of the first one? Definitely not. But at the same time, I don't think any, like, and this is kind of like, this is how I feel like everybody feels about their team at the beginning of March, where you have enough of a sample size that you're just like, am I confident? I don't quite know. I don't know. I wish I knew. And I feel like March 1st, that's how most fans feel about their teams, unless their team has just like the Indiana Pacers last year, right? Like, if a season is just so far beyond your expectations heading in, you feel great on March 1st. But for everybody else, most fan bases on March 1st in most NBA seasons are kind of like, God, I hope this goes well. And I feel like the you know, Lakers fans feel very much the same way. And while we can kind of, and I tend to highlight the concerns, and there are plenty of them, you could also highlight concerns across the entire Western Conference and, frankly, across the rest of the league. And if the Lakers can just get their shit together, commit to a more balanced approach offensively, commit to, you know, playing lineups that have a chance at getting stops and then running on those stops. Like, if they can just commit to the kind of basketball that we've seen, not from a results standpoint, because you aren't going to get these kinds of results when you're playing teams that aren't tanking in the way that the Warriors and the Kings are. But from a process standpoint, if the Lakers can commit to this process that we've seen over the course of this weekend, that does kind of change how I feel about them moving forward. The biggest part of this is LeBron. There's no other way to say it. The Lakers have basically, since he's gotten to LA, the Lakers have gone as LeBron has gone. If he is focused and engaged and disciplined on both sides of the ball, the Lakers tend to be focused and engaged and disciplined. If he's making that extra effort, if he's making the extra pass, if he's playing the right way, the Lakers tend to do those things kind of collectively. And it's this weird thing where your best player isn't setting that tone. In this case, it's your oldest player, which is concerning because you don't know how often he's going to be able to pull out that, you know, 102 mile an hour fastball. But for LeBron, it's funny. I go back and forth on this probably more than almost anything I have ever thought from a sports standpoint, which is, what is LeBron's future in the league? What's his future with the Lakers look like? Some nights you're like, all right, he's probably gone. There was that report the other day. It was like, you know, the sign a trade scenario with the Cavs and Jarrett Allen would potentially go back to the Lakers. And you're like, of all the scenarios, that feels best case. But then there are also weekends like you've had tonight or this weekend. And, you know, tonight he's dunking all over the place and he's celebrating everybody's shots and plays and stuff like that. And you're like, I mean, having LeBron on a basketball team is usually a pretty good thing, especially at the amount of money that he's probably going to make next year. So it's like, I think, and it might be too far gone, probably is, but I think the thing that the Lakers need to do, both from a basketball standpoint and from a human standpoint, is try to find a way to recapture the vibes when Luka first got there. And this, like, where you know, LeBron and the Lakers and more LeBron and Luka were, like, both very focused on, like, let's make this work. Let's figure out a way to make this work. And you know, LeBron was involved and LeBron was engaged and the Lakers played good basketball down the second half of that season after the Luka Doncic trade, even while they were building that plane mid-flight. And I'm watching, you know, last night's game, and I'm watching tonight's game. And in both of those games, it was just very clear that there was a stated goal of, like, let's also be a LeBron team. We know we're a Luka team, and we know what the ceiling is with a Luka team, or like with the Lakers as a Luka team. The ceiling, you know, the Lakers' ceiling is, I think, quite a bit higher if it is a LeBron and Luka team. And it's even higher from there if it's a LeBron and Luka and Austin team. And the more diverse and the less predictable and the more balanced the Lakers approach is, the better the basketball is and the better the Lakers become as a basketball team. So I think that, you know, the couple of games that we saw from LeBron over this weekend, and again, the bright lights, the disclaimer that should sit above my head is, like, it was the Kings. It was the Warriors. Both those teams suck. Get it. Totally do. It's a disclaimer that is worth pointing out. However, the Lakers haven't, like, blown teams out like this, and especially in back-to-back games, as Jovan pointed out, since November. No, we're in March. That was a long-ass time ago. So, like, you know, I even while I will grant that the two teams being the teams that they are in the current state that both of those teams find themselves in is why the Lakers just blew out two teams in back-to-back games for the first time since November. But I also think that this balanced approach, this kind of overwhelming offense, doing just enough defensively to and then running on those plays that you make defensively, you know, that is the only path forward here for the Lakers. There is no fork in the road, right? Like, there is no like, well, you know, you could do this and maybe it works out this way. There, you know, there is no like, well, you could do that and maybe it works out that way. No, there is one path forward, and then there are two really bad decisions or like, you know, a multitude of really bad paths forward from there. You know, did you guys watch Puss in Boots, right? The Shrek spinoff where, like, when who's like, you know, outlines the path forward. It's all of these like super daunting challenges and trials and tribulations forward. And then like when the, I think it's like a little puppy, you know, holds the map in front of him, it's like, take a nice quick walk through Gumdrop Mountain. You know, it's like, you know, like that's what the Lakers basically have here, where it's like, all right, you could commit to it just being Luka Ball and he gets his, and the Lakers offense becomes that kind of predictable. You probably score fewer points per game, which leads to more stops and more transition opportunities for the other team. And nobody else is in a rhythm very frequently. That's like one path there. And then the other path is like, you know, every time you look at it, angels sing from on high, you know, there's like double rainbows everywhere. And everybody is just like in a significantly better mood because they actually see the basketball from time to time. And I don't say all of this to shit on Luka. Like he's a wonderful basketball player. And I do think that he should have the highest usage rate of anybody on the Lakers, right? But I do think that the more that, you know, the Lakers run stuff that features multiple options, that features strong side and weak side options, that features the threat of or actual skip passes, that quickly move the ball from like a LeBron side to a Luka side, or from like a Luka side to an Austin side, or whatever it is, or sets that feature both of those guys, as the Lakers also basically work with the gravity that somebody like Luke Kennard creates as a shooter, or Jackson creates, or DeAndre Ayton creates as a roller. And the better that the Lakers operate from an offensive standpoint puts their defense in better situations, and the better that their defense performs gives you these transition opportunities. Like, that's the path. This is the way, right? I think in May that movie comes out that I have zero faith in whatsoever. Like, this is the way. The Mandalorian way is right there. It's right there staring at you. And you can choose any other way if you want, but all of those paths are going to lead to trials and tribulations that you yourself chose to put yourself through. And I think LeBron showing life here, and the Lakers, you know, really committing to getting more engagement out of LeBron, I think that was smart, and hopefully we get to build off of that moving forward. All right. We have a few, we have a super comment here, which means I get to play this bad boy. Fuck Washington! All right, so Brandon Noman kicks us off with Vando should take Jake's minutes. I'd try trading DA if he opts in with Jake in the offseason. JJ needs to give AR his own lineups and pair Luka with Braun. Oh, that's interesting. No, I like the Austin Braun lineups, but I would say that like with those Austin Braun lineups, you really have to focus on running Austin Braun sets. Like, I don't, you know, I still don't know where the Austin LeBron two-man game went over the course of the season. And I do think we're starting to see it come back a little bit, but not to the extent that I would like to see it. So I would still kind of go with Luka gets his lineups. LeBron might occasionally get his own lineups. And then if Austin is out there without one of LeBron or Luka, it is, you know, Austin and LeBron sharing the court together. Now, as far as like the Vando taking Jake's minutes thing, not going to happen. Jake is at least seen as a threat to shoot threes. You know, he gets harder closeouts, which and you know, guys shade away from Vando a lot more than they shade away from Laravia. And because of that, JJ is always probably going to lean in Laravia's direction. As far as trying to trade DA if he opts in, it's not, I don't think it's a matter of if Ayton opts in. I think he's opting in almost no like not no matter what, but like I would put Ayton opting in at like a 90% chance here. But I do think, because I don't know that, or I don't think that Ayton would buy into a backup center gig and or role. And I also think that the Lakers cannot be championship contenders with DeAndre Ayton as their starting center, which means they, I think, should go out and trade for or sign a starting center next year. And like, I would just much rather have, if they were the only two options, which they aren't, but if they were the only two options, I would much rather bring Hayes back than Ayton, just for like his willingness to accept that bench gig.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Now look, trading Ayton becomes pretty easy. You know, he becomes an expiring contract. You know, no team is going to be worried about like, gosh, I can't trade for DeAndre Ayton, and then I'm worried about paying him. I think his market is his market. I don't think any team will be too worried about paying DeAndre Ayton after next year. So I would probably say like trading DA probably feels pretty likely. And then, you know, combining him with Jake, I actually think Jake is worth keeping around. I love his energy. I love his engagement level. Obviously wish he knocked down more three-pointers. But I high motor wings who have even a chance at becoming like a 3-and-D high motor wing, like those are the guys you keep in your organization until you absolutely, you know, that you have no other choice. So I would personally keep Jake in the organization for as long as I can. He's on an extremely reasonable contract. They've gotten way more than their money's worth for Jake this year. And I think they will probably get way more than their money's worth again next year. And then, you know, look, after that, if the numbers start creeping upward and on Jake and you aren't very comfortable with them, then yeah, I think at that point you probably consider or probably really look into trading him. But trading him before next year, you know, before next season, unless it's for a player who, you know, like a legitimate upgrade, who becomes such a good starting player that it makes up for Jake, you know, in his production off of the bench.
Gosh,
that to me is kind of how I would handle that. But yeah, like as far as like Vando taking Jake's minutes, I get where you're kind of going there. I do think that the Lakers could benefit from more athleticism. Give me more Adu Thero minutes, for example. But as far as like Vando coming in for Jake, I mean, Vando isn't even in the rotation tonight. So, you know, and I think there's a decent chance that Maxey just supplanted Vando in the, like, JJ Redick, the thing that he, like, we all have pet peeves, right? My pet peeve here in the house is, like, I need walkways. Like, there can be clutter. We have kids. there's going to be stuff that isn't put away at the end of the night. Like every so often there's going to be, it's going to get kind of messy, you know, especially over the course of the day. But like nothing bothers me more than like, you know, turning into a hallway and I like step on something because it's sitting there in the middle of the hallway. Like, give me a walkway, and it really sticks out to me when I don't have that walkway, you know, cause you know, I'm either stepping on stuff or I'm walking around stuff and like stubbing my toe on because I'm going away from my normal path through the house. That stuff drives me nuts. JJ Redick's pet peeve is always going to be shooting. JJ Redick is always going to view basketball through a shooting prism. And there are mistakes that another player can make. There can be errors of commission or omission that you know, JJ Redick will notice, but won't overreact to. But the one thing that JJ Redick is that will always drive JJ Redick crazy is if he sees the ball rotate over there and it's Jared Vanderbilt at the end of that swing thing and the defense just does not care. Even if like Jared Vanderbilt makes that three-pointer, that wide open three-pointer, the fact that teams just will never, ever, 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 ever react to Vando shooting threes. Like, I'm sorry, like JJ Redick will never be okay with that. So, the whole, you know, Vando, like it, the guy whose minutes Vando would most likely take would be Maxi Kleber's. He's not touching any of Jake LaRavia's. Let's see. Let's go up here. D Russ, the legend. Don't care that it's a sub 500 team that is injured. Always nice to beat Westbrook. We'll put air quotes on injured, because, like the Utah Jazz have people getting like nose jobs to miss the rest of the season, you know, like, the Kings are doing a lot of the same stuff. So like they have guys who were banged up. They have guys who, may actually be injured. I am sorry, guys. They have guys who might actually be injured and going through some stuff, but they also have guys who they're like, hey, what if we say that you're getting, you know, elective surgery on, you know, to correct this like long-standing thing that may or may not exist, but it at least saves face from you no longer being in the rotation. We also think that you help us win. We can't have that. Let's just go ahead and fix that thing that's been nagging you for the last year or so. And they have guys missing that way. But as far as like the Westbrook part of this, this was the first game since the Russell Westbrook experience. This is the first game that I was watching and I was like, oh, Westbrook. Like I've just fully moved on. I don't know. I never had anything all that personally against Russ. Like I thought he really tried. I think everybody really tried to make it work. It just was never going to work. And you know, the Lakers traded for a guy right before it became crystal clear that he should not be a max player. And unfortunately, they traded for that guy with multiple years left on his contract at a max number. And it just was brutal. But I still don't think he handled that situation as well as he could have. I don't think LeBron handled that situation as well as he could have. I think Frank Vogel, I wouldn't go so far to say that Frank Vogel quit on the situation, but I also don't think that Vogel, he made it very, very, very apparent that was not the version of the roster that he wanted to coach. I don't think anybody handled that situation, probably starting with the front office and starting with ownership, who immediately started peddling blame to other people to so that they could keep their jobs after maybe the worst harmful summer in Lakers history. So yeah, I would, you know, felt it is nice to beat Russ. That entire experience is just so shitty that, yeah, then you look up, you're like, huh, yeah, that was fun to beat that guy. But today was the first time that the Lakers played a Russell Westbrook team. And I, like, he had the ball and I was like, huh, I didn't think of this guy at all until this very moment. And then, like, the time that I recognized this, he just happened to shoot that pull up three from the right side that hit like the bottom of the rim and almost knocked the rim off of the backboard. Like it was honestly refreshing to like see him over there, not think of him very much. And then just, you know, watch the Lakers very methodically take care of business. That's the most important part, that they just beat the crap out of the Kings, because they just needed to beat the crap out of somebody. Let's see, go here again. Jake Laravia is a below average player. JJ is overrating him. I actually would say that Jake Laravia is probably like your median NBA basketball player. Like, I think he is very, very, very much average. He works really, really hard, and I think he has good enough defensive instincts to be a slightly above average or actually above average defensive player. But I also think that his shooting is so streaky that he becomes, as a result of that, a probably slightly to actually below average offensive player. And when you average both of those two things out, you probably arrive at an average, like the average NBA player. The thing I will say about Jake Laravia, I don't know how many golf people are here. I went golfing Friday, and one of the guys that we golfed with is just not very good. Like, he's just, he's just not a very good golfer. And, you know, I still had more fun golfing with him than I've had with other better golfers, because he was still really pleasant to be around. Good company, good hang, you know, brought some extra beers. And most importantly, like, if there's a saying in golf, if you're going to suck, suck quickly, right? Like, if you're not going to be good out there, just get it over with and go out there, play fast and like not like too fast so that you never get into a rhythm or give yourself the chance at never getting into a rhythm, but like play fast enough so that you aren't holding up the rest of the group and thus the rest of the course and everybody else on it. And the thing I like about Jake is that even when he is sucking on offense, he is sucking quickly. He makes quick decisions. He's active off of the ball. He's always kind of moving and floating to try to find some other way to impact the game, especially when a shot isn't going in. And those are the kinds of guys, especially at that position, that I would prefer to stick with and try to develop rather than see him approach the sport that way, give up on him as a project, and then watch him figure it out somewhere else. Because I think eventually he's going to figure it out. And I would prefer to employ him when he figures it out. All right, let's go back into these comments. This might just be a shorter show just because I'm kind of tired and here we are. Adam Hurley, the problem is when they beat bad teams, JJ acts like it's all fixed. Smart hasn't scored in double digits since starting at small forward. 6 games, that won't fly against good teams. Yeah, I actually that's a good note, Adam, that, like, you know, there's this kind of exhale from JJ Redick after these games that I think can maybe go a little too far at times. I don't think that you know, a couple of games against bad teams, completely rights all the wrongs. That said, I'm always going to lean towards, you know, stopping and smelling the roses from time to time or celebrating minor wins. Jen always gives me a hard time because I'm the guy that, like, is like, you know, she'll, I don't know, like if I, you know, if she gets like even her annual raise or something like that, which like in the grand scheme of things is only 3 to 4% more than she made the previous year. But still, I'm like, no, baby, you earned a raise. Let's go out and celebrate, you know? And if Avery has like a really good day at school, or if Miles does something around the house that like proves that he isn't an asshole that I sometimes think he can be. I'm like, you know what? Yeah, let's go out. Don't have to spend an arm and a leg. We aren't like celebrating, but let's like go out and let the kids like let them understand through positive reinforcement here that like, yeah, it's a good thing. So I do think that like there is some productivity involved with, you know, enjoying these wins over the slog that is an 82 game season when you get them. But I actually think a different version of this is that I think sometimes JJ Redick kind of explains away losses and then is just like, see, and you know, uses wins to confirm biases he's already kind of predisposed towards. And that is, I think, what kind of gets him into trouble sometimes. So I agree about the Marcus Smart thing. His shot just completely going away after being moved into the starting lineup, I think is due in part to fewer touches in that group. I also kind of wonder, because of how hard he is playing as the starting point of attack defender and basically like just best defender or defensive player in that, or really only defensive player in that starting group, that is kind of taking away from his legs to a certain extent, and that is making him a worse shooter. But I look, here's what I'll say, because I don't think this can be fixed this year. I think Marcus Smart should probably start for the Lakers for the rest of the season, but after this season, the Lakers are definitely going to have to upgrade. And like Marcus, I don't think Marcus Smart can start on a championship caliber team. I think he can play on a championship caliber team. I think he can be a 20-ish minute a night player on a championship caliber team. But starting and playing, you know, 25 to 30 minutes a night on a championship, I think those days are probably behind him. And I think that, you know, to Adam's point here, JJ, you know, uses this weekend to kind of say like, see, we kind of stumbled into something. And look, the rotation, even with the starters at the end of the second quarter, see, that's working. I swear it's working. It's working, right? No, that group is not working. And some of those predisposed biases do still get JJ Redick into trouble. And hopefully he kind of closes that gap to where, like, you don't want to overreact to losses. You don't want to overly pat yourself on the back for wins. You want to stay a little bit more even keeled and hopefully learn a little bit of something from both. All right. I think I okay. User KM4WK. Dude Thero looking healthy. Get him some minutes. His motor and athleticism is crazy. Like, I made this point the other night that, you know, as we go through the rest of the season, if the Lakers do go through another stretch where they slip a little bit, I am kind of sort of done hoping that some of these vets figure it out, or, you know, I'm kind of like, I would much rather get something. It's the Denzel meme. I want to get something from this season. I'm leaving here with something. And if that something is getting a look at a Dude Thero, getting a look at Chris Magnon, getting a better look at Kobe Bufkin, seeing what Bronny can even be become, getting Jackson some minutes with Smart and Luka and Austin and LeBron, give me something over the course of this season so that you're building towards something after this season. And I think one of the ways to really kind of do this, if he can get and stay healthy, is get me some more Dude Thero minutes. He looks great in G League games. He already has like 99th percentile athleticism in the league. And the Lakers just desperately need somebody like that. So, yeah, I'm 100% with you, user. Give me more minutes with this dude and give me, like, I do think by the end of the season, he has to be in the rotation. In some way or another, he should be an every night player. All right, that is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge podcast. As far as this week goes, you got Harrison tomorrow. We got the Lakers play Tuesday night. It's a solo game, so I'll be here in the lounge recapping that on my own. And then I think they play an away game at some point this week too. Yeah, here we go. So Lakers and schedule. And so they play at home on Tuesday, and then they play at Denver Thursday. So Wednesday I'll have a guest. Thursday night, Raj and I will be here to recap Thursday night. And then Friday, Pete and I will be recording an episode of The Hook. So another busy week. And look, we are like, this is the home stretch. 22 games left in the season. By the time we get through the entirety of this week, you will be within the 20-game mark. You know, the final quarter of the season. It's freaking go time, and I can't wait to watch it with you guys. So make sure you guys are subscribed to the show, turn on those notifications, please hit that like button. And then until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin saying have a great rest of your day, make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.